the graveyard rats. Old Mason, the caretaker of one of Salem's oldest and neglected cemeteries, had a feud with the rats. Generations ago, they'd come up from the wolves settled in the graveyard. Collie were abnormally large rats. Mason had taken charge of his inexplicable disappearance. Former caretaker decided they must go. First, he set traps for them, put poison food on their burrows. Later, he tried to shoot them, but it did no good. The rats stayed multiplying and overrunning the graveyard with ravenous hordes. They were large, even for the Mutsus Deuciminanus, which sometimes measures 15 inches in length, inclusive of the naked pink and grey tail. Mason had caught glimpses of some of the large as good-sized cats, and then, when once or twice the gravediggers uncovered the barrows, Midnitonius tunnels, large enough to enable man to crawl into them, his hands and knees. The ships had gone generations ago from distant ports from the rotting sailing wolves had brought strange cargoes. Messiaen wondered sometimes at the extraordinary size of these barrows. He recalled certain vaguely disturbing legends heard since coming to ancient witch-haunted Salem, tales of Mumbarin in human life that's said to exist in forgotten burrows in the earth. The old days when Cotton Mather had hunted down the evil cults and worshipped Hatecart, the dark Magna Mater in frightful orgies had passed, but dark gabled houses still leaned prosperously towards each other over narrow cobbled streets. The blasphemous secrets and mysteries were said to be hidden subterranean tunnel cellars and taverns. Forgotten pagan rites were still celebrating defiance of law and sanity. Wagging their grey heads wisely, the elders declared there were worse things than rats, maggots crawling under the earth, as ancient Salem cemeteries. Then, too, there was the curious dead dread of the rats. Mason disliked and respected the ferocious little rodents. He knew the danger that lurked in their flashing, needle-sharp fangs. Could not stand the inexplicable horror which the oldsters held for the deserted, rat-infested houses. He heard vague rumours of ghoulish beings that dwelt far underground, and the power of commanding the rats marshalling him like loyal armies. The rats and old men whispered there were meshes between the West World and the grim ancient caravans of below Salem. By the discerning them from the graves and nocturnal subterranean face, they said, the myths of Pied Piper, the fable that hides the blasphemous horror, and the black pits of Benros have brought forth hell-spawn monstrosities, never venture into light of day. Mason paid little attention to these tales. He did not fraternise with his neighbours. In fact, all he could do could to hide existence of rats from intruders. Basically, he realised, without any meaner opening over many graves, while some of the ignored empty coffins could be attributed to the activities of rats, Mason might find it difficult to explain the mutilated bodies lay in some of the coffins. Priest gold is used in filling teeth, and this gold is not removed when a man is buried. Clothing, of course, is another matter, for usually the undercoat provides, a plain broadcloth suit that is cheap and easily recognisable. Gold is another matter. Sometimes, too, with medical students, less reputable doctors who were in need of cadavers, not over scrupulous as to where they were obtained. So far, Mason has steadily managed to discourage investigation, fears denied that the existence of rats, even though they sometimes robbed him of his prey. Mason did not care what happened to the bodies after he performed his gruesome thefts. The rats inevitably dragged away the whole cadaver through the hole and they gnawed in the coffin. Size of these burrows occasionally worried Mason. There was a curious circumstance of the coffins always being gnawed open at the end. Never at the side or top. It is almost as though the rats were looking under the direction of some intelligent. It was almost as though the rats were working under the direction of some possibly intelligent leader. Now he stood in an open grave and threw a little sprinkling of wet earth in a heap beside a pit. Raining a slow, cold drizzle that for weeks had been descending from soggy black cows. grave as a slough of yellow, sticking mud, which the rain-washed tombstones stood up irregular batatons. The rats retreated to their burrows. Maison had not seen one for days. His gaunt and shaven face was set in alluring lines. The coffin in which he was standing was a wooden one. The body had been buried several days earlier, but Maison had not dared to deter it before. Ready to the dead man had been coming grave at intervals, even a drenching rain, but he could hardly come in this late hour, no matter how much grief he might be suffering. Maison thought, grinning wryly. He straightened and laid the shovel aside. For the hill on which the ancient graveyard lay, he could see the lights of flame and flickering dimly through the downpour. He threw a flashlight from his pocket. He could need light now. Taking a spade, he bent and examined the fastenings of the coffin. But he stiffened. Beneath his feet, sensed an unquiet stirring, scratching. There was something moving within the coffin. For a moment, a pang of superstitious fear shot through Maison. Then rage replaced it as he realised the difference of the sound. The rats had stalled him again. Packed him with anger, Maison wrenched the fastenings of the coffin. He got the sharp edge of the shovel under the lid and pried it up until he could finish the job with his hands. He sent the flashlight's cold beam darting down in the coffin. Rain spread against the white steel lining. The coffin was empty. Mason saw a flicker of movement at the head of the case and darted light in that direction. The end of the sarcophagus that had been gnawed through and gaping hole led into darkness. A black shoe, limp and dragging, was disappearing as Mason watched abruptly. He realized rats had forestalled him by only a few minutes. He fell on his hands and knees and made a heavy clutch at the shoe. A flashlight continually fell into the coffin and went out. The shoe was tugged from his grasp. He heard a sharp sight squealing. Then he had a flashlight again, darting light into the burrow. It was a large one. It had to be. The corpse could not have been dragged along it. Maison wondered at the size of the rats that could carry away a man's body. The fork was loaded, but a fully loaded revolver in his pocket fortified him. Probably if the corpse had been an ordinary one, Maison would have left the rats to their spoils rather than venture to narrow burrow, but he remembered it especially fine set of cufflinks he observed, about a skin pin, sit pin, is undoubtedly a genuine payoff. With fiercely pulls, he clapped the flashlight to his belt and crept into the burrow. It was a tight fit, but he managed to squeeze himself along. Ahead of him in the flashlight glow, he could see the shoes dragging along the wet earth at the bottom of the tunnel. Crept along the burrows as rapidly as he could. Occasionally barely able to squeeze his lean body through the wells. He was overpowering. With his musty stench to carry on, could not catch the corpse in a minute. Maison decided he would turn back. Belated fears were beginning to crawl maggot-like within his mind. Greed urged him on. He crawled forward several times, passing the mouths of journeying tunnels. The walls of Darrow were damp and slimy. Twice lumps of dirt dropped behind him. Second time he paused and screwed his head around to look back. Could see nothing, of course, until he hooked the flashlight for his belt and for his first step. Several clods on earth lay on the ground floor behind him. Danger position suddenly became real, terrifying. With thoughts of caving, making his pulse race, he decided to abandon the forest, so even though he could now almost overtake the corpse, visible thing that pulled it. He had overlooked one thing, the barrel was too narrow to allow him to turn. Panic touched him briefly, but he remembered a side tunnel that he just passed, backed vaguely along the tunnel until he came to it. He thrust his leg into it, back until he found himself able to turn. He hurriedly began to retrace his way through, though his knees were bruised and painful. Agonizing pain shot through his leg. He felt like sharp teeth sinking his flesh. Nick kicked out frankly. The squeaking and scurry of many feet, flashing light behind him. Maison caught his breath in a sob of fear. He saw a dozen great rats watching him intently, their slitted eyes gathering in the light. They're great misshapen things, as large cats are behind them. Clumps of kips of dark shape that are stirred and move swiftly aside within the shadow. He shuddered at the unbelievable size of the thing. Light had held him for a moment, but they're edging closer. The teeth, dull orange and light, pale light. Mason tugged at his pistol, managed to screw it from the pocket and aimed carefully. His dog position, he tried to press his feet and soggy beside the barrel, so he could not eventually send a bullet into one of them. The rolling thunder of the shot riffed him at the time, and clouds of smoke set him coughing. When he could not hear him again, the smoke had cleared. He saw the rats were gone. He put the pistol back, began to creep swiftly along the tunnel. Then, with a scurry, a rush, they were upon him again. He stormed over his leg, biting and squealing insanely. Mason shrieked horribly as he snatched for his gun. He aimed without firing. Only luck saved him from blowing his foot off. This time the rats did not retreat so far. But Mason was caroling as swiftly as he could along the barrow, ready for the fire again. First sound of another attack. The pad of feet. He sent a long stabbing pain. Sent the light stabbing pain behind him. A great grey rat paused and watched him. Long ragged whiskers twitched. Its scurrilous naked tail was moving slowly from side to side. Mason shouted and the rat retreated. He crawled on, passing briefly a black gap of the side tunnel with his elbow, made out a shapeless huddle of the damp clay a few yards in the head. A second he thought of a mass of earth being dislodged from the roof, recognised it as a human body. It brown and his mother shriveled mummy. Dreadful, unbelieving shock, Mason realised it was moving. It was crawling towards him, a pale glow of flashing light. Man saw a frightful goggle face thrust into his own. Passionless, death's head skull of long dead corpse, distinct from the hellish life. A gaze, eyes swollen, bulbous, betrayed the thing's blindness. It made a faint groaning sound as it crawled towards Mason, stretching his ragged and grated lips in a grin of an awful hunger. Mason was frozen with visible fear and loathing. Just before the horror touched him, Mason flung himself frankly in the burrows at his side. He heard a scrambling noise at his heels. The thing groaned dully as he came after him. Mason, glancing over his shoulder, screamed and propelled himself desperately through the narrow burrow. He crawled along awkwardly, sharp stones cutting in his hands and knees. Dirt showered his eyes, but he dared not pause even for a moment. He scrambled on, gasping, cursing, praying hysterically. Screaming triumphantly, the rats came at him, horrible hunger in their eyes. Mason almost succumbed in their vicious teeth, for he succumbed in beating them up, seeing them cutting them off. Passion narrowing in a frenzy of terror, he kicked and screamed and fired into a hammer, clicked on an empty shell, but he had driven them off. Found himself crawling under a great stone embedded in the roof and drove, crawling to his back. He moved a little as his weight struck it, and idea flashed in Mason's fright-crazed mind. It would bring down the stone so he could block the tunnel. The earth was wet and soggy with the rains. He clutched himself half upright and dug away the dirt around the stone. Rats were coming closer. He saw their eyes glowing in the fraction of the flashlight beam. There still he clawed frankly in the earth. The earth stone was giving. He tugged at it and rocked into its foundation. The rats approaching the monster he already glimpsed. Grey and leprous and hideous, it crept forward, his only chief bared it wake. Came a blind, dead thing, groaning as it had crawled. Mason gave a long, frantic tug at the stone. He felt it slide back downwards when he went scrambling along the tunnel. Behind him, the stone crashed down as he furled. Sudden, frightful shriek of agony. Clods showed upon his leg. Heavy weight fell on his feet, and he dragged them free with difficulty. The entire tunnel was collapsing, gasping for fear. Mason threw himself forward at soggy earth, collapsed at his heels. The tunnel narrowed until he could barely use his hands and legs. Later, to prepare himself, he wriggled forward like an eel. Suddenly felt Saturn tearing through his clawing fingers. Then his head crashed against something in the barrel of his path. He moved his legs, still covering them, not pinned on the collapsed earth. He lay flat on his stomach, When he tried to raise himself, he found that the roof was only a few inches from his back. Panic shot through him. Then, in blind horror, they blocked his path. He flung himself desperately into a side tunnel. A tunnel with no outlet. He was in a coffin, an empty coffin, into which he crept through the hole. A door rats had gnawed it to its end. Tried to turn in his back and found that he could not. Lid of coffin pinned him down inexorably. Then he braced himself and strained at the coffin lid. It was immovable, even if he could escape from the sarcophagus. How could he crawl his way up through 5 feet of hard packed earth? He heard himself grasping a dreadful, freighted, unbearable hot inflexible terror. He ripped and clawed at the Saturn until it was shredded. He made a futile attempt to dig with his feet the earth and collapsed barrow that blocked his retreat. He was only able to reverse his position. He might be able to crawl his way through to air. White hot agony lanced through his breast, throbbed in his eyeball. His head seemed to be swelling, growing larger and larger. Suddenly, he heard his altered squealing larynx. Gained a scream insanely, could not drown him out. For a moment, he thrashed about hysterically with his narrow prison. He was quiet, grasping for air. As his eyelids closed, his sick, blackened tongue protruded, and he sank down into the blackness of dearth, with a mad squealing of the rats dinning in his ears.